My name is Angela, and I'm a survivor of sexual assault. I had just broke up with my high school sweetheart, and I was actually feeling liberated. The relationship had been a really unhealthy one, with years of verbal and emotional abuse. My self-esteem was in ruins. I had spent most of those years worrying about losing the love of my life, when I should have been worrying about losing myself. But I had found the strength to move on, and I was focused on making the most of my fresh start. I spent more time with friends that I neglected for far too long, and I started to feel like my old self again. I was a sophomore in college, and I was finally able to enjoy life as an adult. I took more pride in my appearance. I exercised often, wore makeup, and bought some new clothes. I was feeling better every day. Thanksgiving break came, and I was able to go home and be with my parents for the holiday. That weekend, I was going to a party at the home of an old friend. I was really excited because on more than one occasion, I had secretly hoped to be more than just friends with him. I decided that Saturday would be the perfect time to see if there was still chemistry between us. I was happy to see an old girlfriend there. We hugged as if we hadn't seen each other in decades. The host of the party greeted me with a big bear hug and a kiss on the cheek. I knew I was blushing, but I didn't care at all. Later in the kitchen, he was teasing my girlfriend. She wanted a quarter, and he told her, "If you want it, come and get it." He put the quarter in his mouth, and she tried to pry open his lips with her fingers, but it wasn't working. So I just kind of sauntered over and said, "Hey, give me a try." And I planted a big kiss on his mouth and collected the coin. He smiled, and so did I. Apparently, the chemistry was still there. I didn't know it at the time, but my friend was fuming. Apparently, she also had a crush on this guy and was jealous that I was getting in the way. Shortly after I kissed him, we ran out of beer, and my friend and I were sent to go get some more. You see, she worked at this local gas station, and we knew that we could buy beer there even though we weren't of legal drinking age. While we were at the gas station, we bought the beer with no trouble at all, and we stayed to talk to two of her coworkers for a few minutes. They were older than us by about 7 years. One of the guys seemed to be kind of eyeing me, but I just shrugged it off. But then he said to me in his native Boston accent, "You have the most beautiful blue eyes I have ever seen." My jaw dropped. This mature and amazing-looking man had given me a compliment, and I was flattered. My companion knew he was interested, and she decided to invite both of them back to the party. One of the guys stayed to finish his shift, but the one who seemed interested in me came back with us. My friend whispered in my ear that I should go for it. I was getting pretty wasted by that time and was starting to think that maybe she was right. When we got back to the party, most of the people had gone home. The host had passed out in his bedroom and seemed we were too late with the beer. My girlfriend left to drive some people home, and I worried about driving home myself. She suggested that I get a ride from her coworker, who had joined us for the evening. After all, he hadn't had anything to drink that night. I was nervous because I just met him, but I decided to let him drive me home anyway. He told me that it was a bummer that all my friends had taken off, and I told him that, hey, I wasn't even tired yet. So he suggested that we go back to his apartment for a little while to watch a movie or something. He could tell that I was hesitating, so he said, "Come on, I don't bite." I finally agreed to go to his apartment for a little while. I sat down on the couch in the living room while he popped in a movie and cracked open a couple of beers. Knowing that I had already had too much to drink that night, I decided I'm not going to drink anymore. About halfway through the movie, he leaned in and gave me a lingering kiss. My body tingled, and I snuggled up next to him so he could put his arm around me while we watched. When the movie was over, I felt sober again and thought it was probably time for me to leave. He said he didn't want me to go yet and wondered if I would just dance with him. He turned on some slow dancing music and led me by the hand to the middle of his living room. We kissed again, and he started rubbing my back while we were dancing. I was a little nervous, but I guess I was pretty excited, too. Then he started to unbutton my shirt. I pulled away, but he pulled me back a little bit more forcefully than I was comfortable with. I was torn. I wanted to leave, but I didn't want to mess things up with this new guy. We'd gotten along great up to that point. He started then to kiss my neck. Then, again, he tried to unbutton my shirt. This time, I tried to push him away, but he ripped open my shirt and tripped me. sending me falling onto his carpet. I was shocked at how aggressive he'd suddenly become, and I was really, really scared. He said, "Come on, I can tell you like me." He held me down with his forearm across my neck, leaving his other hand free to undress himself and me. I kept telling him to let me go, but he wouldn't. He just kept saying over and over again, "Trust me, you'll love it." My body froze and my mind felt numb. After what seemed like forever, he got up and said in a threatening tone, "Stay right there." Naked, he walked up to the stairs and to his bedroom. I immediately just got up, threw on my clothes as best I could, searched for my car keys, which were hidden behind the toaster in the kitchen. I ran out the door to my car, and when I was starting my vehicle, I looked up and I saw him staring at me through the window. I just drove off as fast as I could, and I finally let myself cry. I couldn't go home. What would I tell my parents? I didn't even understand what had just happened to me. I decided to drive back over where the party had been. My friend's parents were gone, and I thought, well, I probably could just crash there. And as I walked into the house, I saw that my girlfriend was asleep on the couch. I decided not to wake her up. I went instead downstairs and found my friend who lived there. And in a voice that wasn't quite awake, he asked me if I had brought the beer. I started to cry, and he woke up. He asked me several times what was wrong, but all I could do was just keep on crying. Finally, I pulled myself together, and I told him the whole story. He was infuriated and said that he should just go get his gun and shoot the bastard. I was shaken and scared, but finally I felt calm enough to rest. He got me some blankets and let me sleep in his spare bed. The next morning, I was surprised but really relieved to see that my other friend had already left. I didn't know how to tell her about what her coworker had done to me, but I found out later that she already knew that he had been investigated for similar offenses in the past, and it took me years to forgive her for that. The host of the party went home with me to talk to my parents. They were shocked, of course, and angry, but really supportive. After that, I decided to take a long, hot shower. I didn't know anything about rape exams or DNA evidence. Besides, I wasn't even sure I wanted to report it to the police. After all, I had been drinking, and I had gone to the home of someone I had just met late at night. I had even let him kiss me, and I liked it. Some of the blame had to be mine, right? I thought so. Later that day, the man who raped me called me. I wasn't prepared for that. He actually wanted me to meet him after work that night. I didn't say much to him. I just got off the phone as quickly as I could. I couldn't believe that he had called me and acted as if nothing was wrong. A few days later, I finally felt ready to report the assault to the police. A friend of mine came with me, and he told me that he believed me and that it wasn't my fault. It's funny how much a person's words can mean. Those words made me feel that I would be able to make it through this. After telling my story to the police, I learned that the perpetrator had been investigated for several similar incidences, but he'd never been formally charged. That was a deciding factor right there. I just said, you know, I have to go through this. It's going to be a hard process, but I have to do it. Weeks passed, and I heard absolutely nothing. And finally, a letter came in the mail from the county attorney. It stated that while she believed that my story was true, there was not enough evidence to move forward with the prosecution. Not enough evidence? I was devastated. Why wasn't my word good enough? I felt like I had gone through all the embarrassment and all the heartache for absolutely nothing. I had no idea what I should do next. I returned to school, but I asked for an extension on my assignments and postponed my finals. I wanted to take a semester off to just take some time, but I was informed by the school that time off would jeopardize my scholarship. I tried to appeal this, but the school was unwilling to make any exceptions, no matter what my reason was. So I decided to go back home. I took a little time for myself. I spent time alone. I tried seeing a therapist, but that didn't work for me. I knew that if I was ever going to heal, I would have to figure out on my own how to be whole again. I decided I had two choices. I could either be a victim or I could be a survivor. I knew that I couldn't change what had happened to me, only how I would deal with it. Then I decided to enroll at a local university, and I changed my major to sociology. The more I studied, the more I wanted a career that would really allow me to help people. I was able to work through my feelings and was even able to share my experience with other people. My friends stopped tiptoeing around me, and I began to feel as though my life was finally going to get back on track. I still thought about the assault, but it no longer consumed my thoughts. I even tried getting involved in a few romantic relationships again, but it was really hard for me to trust. When a relationship started to get serious, I would either run away or find some way to sabotage the relationship. While everything else in my life seemed to be going well, I was unable to make a relationship work, and that was really frustrating for me. Eventually, I came to realize that the problem was probably not with the men I was seeing. It was my problem. So I did a lot of reading on healthy relationships and spent some time with male friends and tried to convince myself that not all men are perpetrators. Then one day, I met a man who made me feel alive again. He listened to me like no one else had. There was something about him I felt that I could just trust. We weren't together very long before I decided to share my story with him. And after we dated for a couple of years, we were married. I finished school. I advanced in my career. And although I was feeling successful, I still felt like something was missing. And then one day, there was an ad in the newspaper looking for applicants for a position at our local crime victim services agency. It was for an education and outreach coordinator, and the title just instantly appealed to me, and I applied. As soon as I walked in the door for my interview, I felt at home. The people in the office were really welcoming, and as they spoke to me about their mission and their role in helping victims, I knew that I wanted to work in victim services. I was offered the position, and I accepted it. As I worked with crime victims, I gained knowledge in many areas, including how to recognize healthy relationships. The more I spoke with young people about their relationships, the more I realized that my own marriage was not a healthy one. While my husband and I had 3 children together and appeared to have a happy marriage, I was really uneasy about some of the dynamics of the relationship. I mean, I loved my husband, but instead of getting easier, being intimate with him was getting more difficult. We seemed to argue about it almost every single day. I just couldn't give in, and he just couldn't understand. We ended up getting divorced, and now we're just trying to work together to co-parent our children. All in all, our divorce was the best thing for everyone. Deciding to work with victims of crime has been one of the best decisions that I've ever made. Not only have I been able to reevaluate the direction my life is going, I've also been able to continue healing. I've been able to help others who have gone through similar experiences as I did and to help them navigate their way through the legal system and to find their own courage to heal. Even though my assailant was never prosecuted, I have found tremendous satisfaction in supporting victims and in making sure that their perpetrators are held accountable. But I have to say that my favorite part of the work that I do is prevention. I've been able to talk to kids as young as 3 years old, as well as high school and college students about how to prevent sexual abuse and sexual assault. I mean, I know the statistics. When I speak in classrooms or lecture halls, I'm aware that several of the people in the audience have been or will be sexually assaulted. For this reason, I must always do the best job that I can. I mean, everyone wishes that sexual victimization would end, but I wish for more than that. I want to save lives. The lives of potential victims as well as potential perpetrators. If I have prevented even one person from becoming a victim or a perpetrator, then all the work that I have done has been worthwhile. You see, I no longer regret the pain that I went through as a result of being sexually assaulted. I believe firmly that my life is exactly as it should be. You know, my mom always told me that what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. And you know what? She was right.